it's me, Katieosaurus.
Hey everybody, it's me, Hey Goop.
And welcome to episode 24 of Infinite Quest. It's a lot of episodes, Eric.
It really is. I'm really amazed. I remember we were like, let's just get 10 episodes out and we'll see what happens. And I was like, jeepers.
And now,
24.
Now this is our job.
Yeah, now this is our job.
That's really weird.
That's really cool. I really thought our office would be cleaner once this...
I've been really depressed.
Hey, sweetheart, me too. It's okay. We'll do a cleaning session
after.
It's
so dirty in here. So, hey, before we start this episode, I just want to recommend that if you're my mom, don't listen to this episode. Okay, that's kind of a funny joke. But in all seriousness, this episode is going to be about kink and sex and ADHD. And so if you are uncomfortable with hearing stuff about sex and sexuality, if this is not the right episode for you, if you know me in person and you don't want to know some things about me that you can never unknow, perhaps skip this one.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and say, Mom and Dad, do me a favor and skip this one. I just don't want to have that in the back of my head the whole time, so.
I honestly don't know if my mom listens to my podcast. I'm pretty sure my mom doesn't listen to this podcast. But just in case, if you are my mom, maybe skip this one. Cool.
Well, Katie, so it's finally here. We're having the kink episode.
We're having the long-awaited kink episode. I should say right off the bat that when I say kink, I am saying K-I-N-K, not C-A-K-E, because apparently a lot of people think that I'm talking about cake when I'm talking about kink, because I tend to mutter. And so I've had this weird fear that everyone is going to be very confused about my affinity for baked goods for the next 2 hours or however long this episode will wind up being. So yes, I'm talking about kink, like the sexual practice.
Well, so Katie, you're an experienced kink person. You talk about kink on TikTok.
I do.
You have side gigs. Sorry, you can cut that out if you want. I didn't think of
surprise!
A better term.
I do have an OnlyFans.
Whereas I'm very new. You've sort of introduced me to the world, and that's really, and thank you so much.
It makes me sound like I was like, join my cult. But you were interested in it before you met me. You just didn't really know how to start, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had always sort of had this, I don't want to say like I had this like hole inside my heart or something that needed to be filled, but there was always this like gray area in my head that like, ever since I was like a young person, like 10, 11, 12, like there was always like this, whoa, things intrigue me that don't seem to intrigue other people. And then as I got older and like became more sexual, I realized like, oh, some of this stuff has to do with sex. And so I've always been sort of approaching it, but I've never had like a Virgil to my Dante.
Such an oddly specific reference.
Thank you so much. You've done a lot of me great service.
Well, as we travel the layers of kink hell, I feel like the place to start is just by defining what we are talking about when we say kink.
Yeah, definitely.
Because one of the things that I think is really interesting is that I literally Googled what is kink, because I've always had sort of like my preconceived notions and my understanding that I've built in my years as like a kinkster and a kink educator and that kind of thing. But what I found is that there's actually like a weird sort of change in the terminology that is happening. And so I wanted to talk about that at the very top of the episode for people who might be like, what the fuck are they talking about? But so when we talk about kink, we're talking about the activities that are most normally sort of held under the umbrella of BDSM. So consensual practices that involve but are not limited to like bondage and discipline, dominance, submission, sadomasochism, basically like power dynamic, like explorations of power dynamic and how those manifest in our lives and our sexual lives and that kind of thing. But one of the interesting things that I found in my research is that there's been sort of a change in the terminology. Like it used to be BDSM was the term. Like if you were into BDSM, like that was your definition. But as BDSM sort of like porn, basically, like as porn sort of became more graphic and became much more about like just like the dominance and submission side of things, there was sort of this trend to start just talking about kink as a whole. So kink is basically the opposite of vanilla sex, you know, straight vanilla sex. And that's like the origin of the term is like if you have straight regular sex, there is no, it's straight, there's no kink, it's not bent. And so that's like literally where the term comes from is kink.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
That might be a lie, but I read that on the internet and I said it out loud and then I went, 90 people are going to email us and tell me how wrong I am about that. But that is part of the history that I read. It's like the term kink comes from like that sort of like change in what would other be like heteronormative sex. So.
Yeah, I think, such a core part of it, and you've already said the word, and I want to make sure we highlight it, we give it the attention it deserves, is these consensual practices. Mm-hmm. So if you're having a non-traditional sexual encounter that you feel wasn't consensual, like that's not an accurate representation of kink, what kink is.
No.
Kink is all about, something I particularly enjoy about it is, although you're doing these things that from an outside perspective might seem dangerous or risky, it's all within this immensely safe bubble of consent and understanding, which I think is amazing.
And I like that you said that because I think right off the bat, one of the things that I want to address is the things that kink is not. Mm. And like, first off, kink is not non-consensual. Like kink is always negotiated. Even non-consent in scenes is negotiated. And like, that's a whole other bag of potatoes that I don't want to get into. But like, consent is vital and mandatory for any kink practice. And I think that's really important. But the other thing is that kink is not indicative of abuse. It is not indicative of, you know, bad parenting, like you have daddy issues or mommy issues or anything like that. It is not indicative of mental illness. It is not indicative of any sort of like brokenness or anything wrong with you. It is a predilection. It is a series of preferences. But for many people, and I think this is really interesting, and there's actually a really great quote that I'm going to frantically pull up as fast as I possibly can. Gillian Keenan, who writes a lot about sex and kink, says, "Kink can be such an orienting force that for many of us, it even overpowers gender." And I think that's really interesting because kink is not indicative of, I literally just said this, but like kink is not indicative of being broken or you're crazy or you're gross or disgusting. But on the other side of that, many people are fiercely protective of their kink identities and they are fiercely sort of, I don't want to say guarded, but they're... identity in the kink community makes up a huge part of who they are. And so the conversations about kink in like sort of the larger, more like, I don't want to say like normal, but like conventional society can be really difficult because talking about like being a submissive or being, you know, I don't know, like a leather daddy or something, people can look at you and go like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, oh, did you get spanked as a kid? Like that kind of thing. Where it's like, no, like this is a major part of who I am. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that right off the bat as we go into this episode and we talk about kink. Because especially talking about kink and neurodiversity, I don't want to paint the picture that what we are saying is that like every kinkster has mental illness or has a neurodiversity, nor does every person with a neurodivergency or a mental illness enjoy kink. Like that is not what we are saying. So having cleared that up, shall we move on to the episode?
Sure.
I feel like I just like apologized for 15 minutes before we started the episode. But like, it's really important to me that like we approach this conversation from like a very clear point of why we're talking about this.
Yeah, you know absolutely. What I mean? I think you clarified for an appropriate amount of time.
Okay.
And I think one's, not to draw a terribly bold parallel but or analogy... but I think, I mean, for me personally, and perhaps we'll get into this a bit more later, my understanding of my own neurodiversity and my understanding of my own kink identity were both very much a similar experience and in fact aided in each other.
Yeah.
And so I think if you are neurodivergent and you are also kinky, well, speaking from experience, it helped me to learn more about my kink identity. It gave me sort of the courage to learn more about my neurodivergent identity.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I think, too, like, one of the reasons why I really wanted to do this episode is because I have found that there is such a fit for neurodivergence in the kink community. Like, it makes a lot of sense. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. But one of the things that I struggled with was finding resources about, like, kink safety and neurodivergency. Mm. Like, how do you play safely in a scene when one person or both people have time blindness? How do you deal with rejection-sensitive dysphoria in terms of being a top or a bottom, you know? And those kind of conversations, like, that is why I started, like, making the TikToks and the content that I've been producing, is because so much of the conversation around kink is geared towards there are two, like, you know, neurotypical people having these conversations. And so I don't feel like there are nearly as many resources and guides and things as there should be for people who do have neurodivergencies, you know, and I think that's important to acknowledge as well, like, as we talk about this, because we are both neurodivergent, and that presents its own series of challenges and stuff.
Absolutely. One of the more striking ones to me was dopamine deficiency. ADHD person has a dopamine deficiency. And when you're just getting flooded with all this crazy dopamine, especially early on in kink, and you experience what you've told me is called frenzy. It's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Let's do this forever, all the time. Which means all the time is a very risky thing to try to hold in your brain when you have time blindness. But that was definitely something that if I didn't know from you, thank you, that you have to be careful about the amount of dopamine that's getting flooded in your brain when you're a neurodivergent person and a neurotypical person, but especially if you're a person who already has an ADHD deficiency.
Well, and for somebody who might not be hip to the cool lingo, when we talk about frenzy, we talk about, it's a very common experience in the kink community, and it's a new person comes into the scene, and they start playing, and they start, you know, experiencing, like, kinky activities, and they tend to, sometimes, people will be like, I need more right now, and it becomes, like, a very dangerous cycle of risk-taking activities where people are going out of their way to experience as much kink as they possibly can right off the bat. And so that is called frenzy, because it is not necessarily the healthiest way to sort of, like, get involved in the community. And I was one of those people. I had a wicked case of frenzy. But because I was primarily playing with, you know, individual partners, like, you know, one at a time, they didn't know. And so, like, I did some really dangerous stuff. And so that's something that I think is really important, especially in conversation with neurodiversity, is that, like, dopamine drop, and just drop in general, like, sub drop, dom drop is such a real thing. And it's about the burning through those chemicals in your brain, and you feel like shit the next day. But when you already have naturally lower levels of dopamine and serotonin, like, wow, can the sub drop hit hard. Mm-hmm. And then even more with, like, rejection sensitive dysphoria and sub drop, it's not great sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
So I don't know where I was going with that, but this is a really good podcast so far. It's me apologizing for everything that we haven't talked about yet. I'm really nervous about this episode, because this is something that, like, I'm so passionate about, and I care so deeply about the kink community and, like, the neurodiverse community. I'm really scared that I'm going to say the wrong thing, you know? Mm. And I realize that we have the ability to, like, edit. We can edit this afterwards. Whoa. But, like, I don't know. Like, I just, like, I feel like I have so much to say about this, and, like, now I'm trying to, like, say it all at once, which is silly, because we could just do a part two and a part three.
That's true, Katie.
For forever.
This is our podcast.
I'm having frenzy about the kink podcast. This is what is happening right now.
Well, all right. So then I'll give you a break. Let me try to say everything.
Okay. I am going to drink my very noisy drink right now.
Oh, yes, please. Go for it.
I regret putting ice in my drink.
Yeah, ice in podcasts. Just generally not friends. Well, so I was just reading, there's a researcher named Samuel Hughes at the University of California, Santa Cruz, who is a prominent kink researcher who basically goes on FetLife and whatnot and assembles these research projects to just study what is up with kink, what trends are going on in kink. And he identified five stages of kink development in a person's life. The first is sort of self-exploration. When you're... to that apparently it typically occurs before the age of 10. Now, this does not necessarily have anything to do with sexuality. It's just particular episodes of, you know, TV, like a superhero movie where there's a person tied up in distress. Again, it's not necessarily sexual. It's just that for some reason makes your brain go like, oh, this is intrigue. It draws your attention. Or if you're playing Cops and Robbers or Capture the Flag, you want to be captured. You enjoy being captured and or kept in jail and Capture the Flag.
I'm like, you haven't told me about this yet, and so I'm realizing that live time I'm going to be running through these moments in my head, and I'm very excited to see what I learn. I'm gonna have a podcast breakthrough. I know I'm gonna have a podcast breakthrough. Okay, keep going, because I've already had my first one. I'm like, yep, okay, well, I know.
All well, right. Absolutely. Like, so I was gonna list all five, but this first one is fascinating because I'm doing the same thing. Like, I remember being like. But when memory barely existed for me, like those little things where I don't remember what was happening, I just remember little snapshots. I remember like I always really liked trying to get, like, I would wear long sleeve shirts, stretch out the sleeves so they were like way over my hands, and I always liked trying to get them as tangled as possible so that like I was restrained in my shirt. Again, nothing to do with sexuality. I had no idea what sexuality was. It just for some reason that was intriguing to me. Stuff like that. I'm trying to think of other not examples I don't necessarily want to bring up because you do a lot of weird stuff when you're a kid for no reason.
This is a judgment-free zone.
Well, thank you very much. But I remember, like, what else? I remember whenever I would, like, go to the bathroom, I was always like, toilet water's weird. Like, I never, like, drank the toilet water. Not that if you did drink the toilet water, then that's fine. But for some reason, I was like, what makes that different than normal water? Isn't it weird that we consider this to be... But, like, that just, for some reason, just triggered my brain to be, like, to wonder about that kind of thing. Which was just fascinating to read that apparently a kink... One's relationship with kink, apparently, according to Samuel Hughes, starts very early. And what's fascinating about that, to me, is that at that same time, I was noticing things... about my neurodivergencies in much the same way.
Interesting.
Which now looking back, I was like, oh yeah, my basement was constantly, you know, filthy with half-finished project. You know, when I was six, I really enjoyed like crumpling up tinfoil and hitting it with a hammer so it became like this little piece of metal. Like, I love that. I did it all the time. But I would like do that and then forget about it and then become obsessed with spray painting. Like, I remember there was a big board in my basement where I would just put like things up against the board and then spray paint over it and then remove it. So it had like this little print on it.
Oh yeah.
So I was just constantly doing stuff like that. And like when my friends came over, some of them, the people that ended up being my really good, like childhood friends, loved doing that kind of stuff. And some of them were like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, do you want to watch TV? Like, I don't understand what you're doing. And I think, well, the second stage of a kink relationship is, Samuel Hughes's five stages of kink relationship typically occurs between the ages of 5 and 14, where you basically start to realize that these fascinations that, again, also may not be necessarily sexual are not shared by everybody. That there's, that you know, you might feel that you should keep them secret. Or that you should feel ashamed, God forbid, about those sorts of things. And again, in much the same way, as I started realizing that not everybody shared those same neurodivergent qualities that I didn't understand were part of some larger trend at the time, I started becoming ashamed about those. I started becoming ashamed about how messy my backpack was and how, you know, I couldn't sit and just watch TV with my friends. And so my relationship with kink has followed a remarkably similar trajectory, like every step of the way.
This is fascinating. I love that you're drawing this parallel.
Right?
So what's the third?
Oh, the third typically occurs between the ages of 11 and 14, which is sort of evaluation.
Okay.
Which is, okay, so where does this leave me? And I guess you could sort of think of this as like a gestation period, or like a simmering period, a distillation period, where, you know, where does this all leave me, basically? Evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do now? Typically at this point, it starts, this is general, apparently, again, according to Samuel Hughes' research, this occurs between the ages of 11 and 14. And that's when this, it's generally becomes a markedly sexual thing. Masturbation is involved, seeking out pornography.
I'm so and other upset at Samuel Hughes. Like, by the fucking numbers, I'm tracing this, right? In my own life.
Well, when you...
Like, I was 11. I was 11 years old the first time that I masturbated. Like, I remember that. I was 11. Like, I'm just, fuck you, Samuel Hughes.
Yeah, and it was like, I know, well, even when I first started, like, I don't know at what point it, like, became, or it goes from, like, mindless self-exploration to official, like, masturbation. I have no idea. But I remember, yeah, like, around 14, I didn't know, it was like... It feels so weird using the term kink in relation to an 11-year-old, but it was me. Yeah. Know, I'm referring to my 11-year-old yeah. self. I didn't masturbate in the way that, like, I don't know, one would picture masturbation, like picture what it is in movies and stuff like that.
Sure.
It was just like trying to experience interesting sensations on my genitals, frankly.
Yeah.
And that was like a several year long period. Eventually I realized like more efficient ways of doing it, and that became the way that I did it. But in those early stages, as that weird fascination with strange things started to blend and gradate into sexuality, there was like, yeah, 11, 12, or between the ages of 11 and 12, it was what I now notice to be sensation play. Is I was just curious about all these weird sensations that are happening. Not to mention during those ages, one is going through puberty.
Mm-hmm.
And so your sexual self is awakening. There's all sorts of strange hormonal things happening.
Well, it's one of the reasons why, I mean, I'm sorry to cut you off, but no, like, please. I think it's like one of the reasons why, like, I changed the way that I introduced my TikTok videos. Hmm. And I thought a lot about this because I used to be like, if you're not 18, get the fuck out. What I realized is, like, I was 11 when I started exploring my sexuality. Like, I was, you know, I was 11, 12, 13. And it's like, I think it is appropriate to be like, hey, kids, let's talk about fucking sex? No. But I think that it's really important that we talk about sex and sexuality in a way that makes the 11 and 12 year olds not embarrassed and not ashamed. And if they have questions and if they have concerns, like, they can go to the people that they trust and say, like, hey, like, this is the thing that I want to learn more about or whatever. And like, there shouldn't be, I think, there's such a stigma, and there's such like this weird thing about like, we can't ever talk about bodies with kids. We can't ever talk about sex. And it's like, do I think that like it's very nuanced, I think. You know, it's a very delicate thing because you don't, like, every kid is at a different developmental stage and like kids mature differently and that kind of thing. But like, it's weird. It's just like you said, like, it's weird thinking of like sexuality in terms of myself as an 11-year-old. But like, I remember that. Like, I remember having those thoughts and like being confused as an 11-year-old. And so I wish that there was a way that it was like appropriate to like have those conversations in a way that doesn't make you sound like an absolute fucking creep monster, you know? Because it's just like, I don't know, it's like, I just like, I worry so much about like the Katies of the world who are like out there being like, what's wrong with me, why do I like these things? And it's like, well, you're 12, we can't let you listen to this podcast yet, but
right?
Someday you're gonna be like, I wish I had this when I was 12. And it's just like, what do you, I don't know how to have those conversations.
Yeah, it's something that honestly infuriates me, that whenever like sex education is brought up in school, like even the idea of referring to the bare science behind sex to somebody under the age of 18, politicians and notable, typically religious figures will say like, it doesn't belong in the schools, that's the job of the parent. But not them. I'm not fucking talking to my kids about that kind of shit. They can learn on their own. There's so like, it frustrates me how much kids and teens and whatever sub 18-year-old people are just so left to just figure it the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, have fun. Like, I'm going to put a blindfold on you and tell you to run through this room. And you're going to figure out what's going on in there by smashing into everything. And you're going to have an awful time. Where I could just take the blindfold off and say, look, all this stuff. Like, it's absolutely infuriating. So then the next phase, as Samuel Hughes puts it, stage four of kink development, is finding others. This typically occurs between the ages of 11 and 18. Perhaps that middle evaluation phase was very quick. But again, this does not necessarily mean that you were finding other people as sexual partners. I remember when I think I was probably 13, when I met groups of people who I could say, like, hey, you know, isn't it kind of weird how nobody drinks toilet water or whatever the hell? People who weren't immediately put off.
I want to very quickly clarify that Eric has been talking a lot about toilets.
That's not my thing.
The kink conversation that Eric is alluding to.
No.
He just picked a very weird example.
That was a very strange example. But yeah, so that's not my thing. Not that there's anything wrong with that being someone's thing, but just for the sake of accuracy, that's not my thing. That was just a weird example of like a conversation that I wondered about, but I couldn't have with people because they were so guarded all the time. But I remember when I met like this group of people. I can remember their names. I won't say them, but I can remember their names. When we could, I felt like I could just express things. I could just say things and say, "Isn't that weird? What do you think about this?" I remember my first the first girl I kissed actually. Her name was Miriam. She had a nickname that everybody actually called her, but her real name was Miriam. It's a very strange nickname, so I don't want to actually, but Miriam, you know who you are if you're listening, hello.
can't decide if that's a better or worse dox of, like, she had a nickname, but here's her real name.
Well, like, nobody knew that it was really like, there's nobody knew. But anyways, I remember she was my first kiss. We were kissing on, like, a merry-go-round at a park, you know, the ones that you could, like, spin.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And I was kissing her, and then I just remember saying, like, isn't it weird that we don't just spit in each other's mouths? I swear to God, I said that. I was like, because it's the same thing. Like, that's all we're doing by kissing is we're just swapping saliva.
God.
And that's fine. But if you spit in someone's mouth, it's, like, strange. It's the same thing. You're just exchanging saliva. And she just laughed really hard.
Oh, my God.
And she was like, yeah, that is weird. And I was like, I don't want to be, I remember, I clarified. I was like, Miriam. Like, I want to clarify, I'm not asking to spit in your mouth. I mean, if you want me to, I will. I'm merely wondering why that's weird, but kissing isn't. Well, have you ever noticed it, like, sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of saliva in your own mouth right now.
Yes.
You listener, there's a lot of saliva in your own mouth right now.
Thanks for pointing it out.
But if you spit, like, into your hand.
Right.
Imagine licking it back up. It's gross, right? And that's disgusting. It's the same thing. It's already in your mouth. It's just now you've removed it from your mouth and you're putting it back in. Why is that so much weirder? I have no idea. I still lose sleep over it. Anyways, I remember...
Like how all of your bones are wet right now.
Oh, come on, Katie.
They are.
They are. They're
all
wet.
All of your bones are wet.
Are just wet.
All of them. They're except all inside for, of you wet right
except
now.
Except for perhaps your teeth.
My teeth are very wet right now.
What about your cochlear bone?
My...
It's the bone, it's the tiny, teeny, tiny bone in your ear.
I feel like those
are probably wet.
Those are covered in hair and earwax.
I don't think that's true.
We're gonna have to edit this part out.
No, we're not.
This is too gross.
No, you gotta leave it, Katie. This is what gives seasoning to the podcast. The weird. Although I know you'd like undressed salads and dry sandwiches.
Listen, I'm so sidebar to the sidebar. I don't like sauces. I like pasta sauce. I like pancake syrup, and that is about it. And I don't know why you keep trying to feed me aioli and vinaigrette when I have clearly told you over and over and over that I don't like sauces. They creep me out. I don't like them. They taste bad. You're not going to change my mind. Hey, Eric.
Hey, what's up? Hey.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
It It's our first commercial ever.
Oh my God, we're like an official podcast.
I know, we did it.
Who's the sponsor?
Well, Eric, I have a couple questions for you.
Well, I got a couple answers.
Do you know what I like?
What do you like? Kidding?
Being able to see.
I love it. It's like my favorite.
It's like my favorite thing. Do you know what else I like?
What else?
Being super stylish.
I like both of those, second only to being able to see.
Do you know what the third thing I like?
What's that?
Affordable glasses frames that are also quality.
You just named my first three favorite things.
That's
Katie.
Really weird.
In exactly the same that order.
Well, I have some really good news for you, Eric.
Really?
Yeah. Thanks to our good friends at zeelool.com, that's zeelool.com, you can get stylish and affordable glasses that can also, in fact, help you see.
Oh my God, I'm never going to leave their website. I'm just going to click around.
But here's the most important thing. When you're on that website, if you use code KDO, that's C-A-T-I-E-O, they'll give you 10% off your order.
What?
Yeah, they'll give you a little something off the tap.
Well, when you frame it like that, Katie.
I know, when you view it through that lens.
No, ocular.
It's really uncharted territory, because like when you go
like
to the eye doctor,
chart?
there no, it's like, you know, the A and then the letters,
yeah,
get
like
smaller.
A seeing chart.
Yeah. That was a really good.
You know
point.
What I always say whenever I just guess the whole time. I just go Z-E-E-L-O-O-L. That's what I guess every time.
Also, their logo is glasses. Did you know that?
Oh,
I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah, the L-O-O-L makes a little pair of glasses.
Oh,
yeah,
that's adorable.
Yeah, I know. And you can go look at it if you go to zeelool.com. That's Z-E-E-L-O-O-L.com. And use discount code KDO for 10% off your order.
I've been looking on their stuff lately. I'm going to get one of those sweet Atticus Finch glasses.
Oh, you're going to look so good.
And I'm going to like walk around and I'm going to be like, I object. And it's going to be the sweetest thing.
I already object to that. That idea,
because of the code KDO, I can afford it now.
And
that.
Because everybody wants to know, I'm just going to tell you right now, the green glasses are called the Dalton glasses, and you can get them for 10% off at Zulu.
Oh, finally, I can sleep.
I know.
Gosh.
All right. Do you feel we have commercialed adequately?
I think we commercialed pretty adequately. Let's
okay.
Let's glasses pun.
That was a really good glasses pun.
Thanks.
I'm really proud of you.
Thanks, Zulu.
Okay. Thanks, Zulu. Nailed it. Crushed it. Bye.
Hey everybody, it's me, Katieosaurus, and we just wanted to let you know that this week's episode is brought to you by our good friends over at Honey Playbox. What is Honey Playbox, you might ask? Well, I'm gonna give it to you straight. They sell sex toys. But here's the thing. Honey Playbox believes that pleasure, play, health, and accessibility are necessary for positive experiences of sexuality. And you know what? Here at Infinite Quest, we agree. Especially in conversation with how tough sex and sexy times can be when you're struggling with ADHD or depression or any sort of neurodivergency. Having open, honest conversations about sex and sexuality are really, really important to us. And our friends at Honey Playbox agree. And not only do our friends at Honey Playbox agree with that, they also want you to save a little bit of money while you're having these conversations and exploring sexuality and what works and doesn't work for you. So they've hooked us up with a 20% off discount code. From now until the end of March, use code INFINITEQUEST to get 20% off your order. That's like honestly not a bad deal, you guys. I'm not gonna lie. Also, just because I think this is very funny, Honey Playbox was kind enough to send over just a ludicrous amount of stuff for me and Eric to look at and talk about. So in the next couple of weeks, you're going to see some content over on the YouTube, and we're also going to talk more just about sex toys and how they can help your ADHD relationships. So we will be posting that content soon, so you have that to look forward to. So again, use code INFINITEQUEST if you want 20% off your order over at Honey Playbox, and have fun. Okay, bye.
Anyways,
so back to spitting in Miriam's mouth.
Okay, back to spitting in Miriam's mouth. I remember the feeling of alleviation when I could finally just wonder stuff to people. Again, some of them were related to sexuality, some of them fucking weren't. But I remember just being able to just be myself. Sometimes they would laugh, sometimes they would go, huh, but they weren't just completely like, they were engaging. They weren't just like, that's weird, we're not going to talk about that. And that was also the fucking same with my neurodivergency. There were certain people who I couldn't just be openly ADHD around. Like, I just couldn't do it. They would, or if I could, I was like a prop. I was there for entertainment.
Yeah. Oh. makes me sad.
It was fucking entertaining. I mean, look, I liked it. I liked being entertained.
Well, what I think is really interesting is, like, and I haven't gone into a lot of specifics with mine, but, like, one of the things that I very, very clearly remember is, like, I found my, like, kink community right around that age. I was, like, 14, 15. You know, back in my day where we didn't all have the internet and cell phones, but, like, finding online communities of, like, kinksters were like, yeah, I'm totally 18, you know? But, like, that was how I learned. Like, that was how I found out that, like, there were other people who liked the things that I like. And I think, like, TikTok has become that for a lot of people. Like, whether or not it is, you know, like, oh, I have ADHD, here's a community of ADHD people, or autistic people, or kinksters, or whatever. Like, I feel like a lot of our listeners, a lot of our viewers are in that part. They're in that, like, especially our younger viewers are in that moment of, like, finding out that there are other people like them. And it's, like, weird to remember back, because, like, I literally haven't thought about it in years. Like, I remember the websites that I used to go to. I remember, like, the fucking, like, GeoCities message boards, because I'm elderly, you know, that I would frequent, and I would learn things about kink and BDSM and that kind of thing. And it's like, now we might be part of that person's, like, other people's journeys, and that, like, weirdly, like, makes me happy. Like, I feel like it's like a little bit, like, full circle.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. and for a moment that makes me feel a lot of pressure to be, like, accurate and whatnot.
But yeah,
honestly, what I was looking for at the time, I didn't know that this is what I was looking for at the time, but looking back, I wasn't looking for accuracy necessarily. I was looking for fucking honesty.
Yeah.
So, well, many people were so guarded about, I mean, I'm still frustrated when I would ask strange, like, I'm trying to be honest without being vulgar, but when I would, like, you know, there'd be a scene in a movie that I'd be watching with my friends, and there's, like, a person tied up, or there's a person, like, you know, in distress, and it's a movie, so we're not looking at a person actually in distress.
Yeah.
But, like, and, you know, just for the, because I want to be, like, intellectually and emotionally intimate with, like, my friends, that's something I value in a relationship, I would feel the urge to say what I was thinking, which is, like, you know, I don't know, wouldn't you like that to happen to you, or something like that? And they would either laugh in a dismissive way, like, that was an entertaining and funny thing to say, thank you, Eric. Or they would just go, Jesus, and, like, not do anything. So laughing like you're laughing right now, because, you know.
I'm laughing because I know the movie that I asked my friends about.
What was the movie?
This is a true story. This is a real true story about me. And it's funny that you said the first sort of exploratory level one of it's the same scene. It's been the same scene for a lot of my life.
Oh, God. I think my brain is telling me that you've told me.
I think I have.
And I want to try to think of this. It, but I don't want to sit here in silence for 10 minutes while I try to remember.
That's okay.
So as soon as you say it, I reserve the right to go, oh, God damn it, I would have gotten there.
No, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
It's the corset lacing scene from Meet Me in St. Louis.
I would never have gotten that.
Okay. Totally, but that was one of the first times that I remember being, like, actively fascinated by this, like, idea of, like, corsets and confinement and, like, that kind of thing. And then I remember being, like, older and, like, you know, you want to show your friends the movies that you love. And so I showed them Meet Me in St. Louis, which, I want to be very clear, is a fucking Judy Garland movie musical from, like, the 1940s. Like, it is not a sexual film, like, in any stretch of the imagination.
Is that the one with that song that she forgot the lyrics to?
Yeah, the trolley song?
That's that one.
Yeah, it's the one.
Oh, okay.
I've told you about this movie because I love that movie. But, like, so I remember being a teenager and, like, showing it to my friends and being like, oh my God, like, wouldn't it be, like, so cool if, like, we all, like, had, like, corsets or whatever. And they were like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, and I remember being like, oh, I'm the weird one. I'm the one. But, like, to this day, like, now, like, as an adult who, like, I'm comfortable talking about my sexuality, like, lingerie and, like, corsets and, like, that, like, they are so, like, appealing, you know what I mean? And, like, that is like a part of my, like, whole kink identity, is, like, the clothes that I wear when I am kinking, I guess. Like,
Yeah, what the hell is the noun or the verb form when I'm
I would say like playing in a scene.
Oh, yeah, I guess you say playing, yeah.
But, I mean, it also depends because, like, you know, I mean, we're going to get to this probably later, but, like, you know, I'm a Switch, so, like, I'm not always subbing or submitting. Right. Like, sometimes I'm topping. Or, like, I don't know. I don't... I'm sure that there is a word, and we're going to get another 40 emails like, you fucking idiots.
I also want to clarify, I'm glad you said those terms. So, there's subbing, being the submissive person. Mm-hmm. And then the opposite of a sub, generally speaking, if you're looking on the internet and stuff, the term you will most commonly see is domming. It just so happens that Katie doesn't aesthetically like the word dom.
I hate the term dom. I hate it.
Why? Oh, so instead, Katie used the term
top. So I say top. I say so, topping and bottoming.
Topping and bottoming.
Because I have this weird, I think part of, and I also hate the term brat, but that's the term that I use the most on TikTok because I think it's the funniest. But like, I think that submission is a misnomer. Because in a healthily negotiated scene, really and truly, the submissive has all the power. The submissive is handing that power over to the dom or the top or whatever you want to call it. But like, I am subbiest sub in all of Subbington, Subspace McGee, I am under absolutely no impression that at any point I could just be like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. And it would stop because I'm in charge. I am in control. Right. And so like, and there are some people who like genuinely give up that power and have like that genuine power exchange. But even that is negotiated. Even yeah. that is part of the submissive or the bottom or whatever. And so like, I just say top and bottom. And like in my head, top is the person doing the thing and the bottom is the person having the thing done to them. But I also think it's important because I am a Switch. And like, not to spill the beans this early in the episode, but like, we have been doing stuff and we will switch in the moment. And like, mm-hmm. so it's like all of the surprise, everybody. This is the big reveal.
This is the first recorded, we've referenced it on like lives and stuff. Yeah, this is the first recorded instance of us admitting
this is it.
To being romantically involved together.
Well, nobody said it was romantic. That was so mean. I'm so sorry. That was really mean. Man. That was really mean. I'm sorry.
Well, joke's on you, because that was significantly louder than the rest of the episode, and you're going to have to, because you're doing the editing this week, so ha ha ha.
Oh, no, it is so loud.
Look at all that, those spiky spikes.
Oh, no, that's terrible. Oh, man.
Well, so on the topic of...
So, I mean, sorry, you go.
No. You go.
Thanks. But no, I mean, so like, I don't know, like, I realize that it is a very, it's like the same thing, like, I hate being called ma'am. I fucking hate ma'am. Mm. I live in the South. I get called ma'am all the time. I fucking hate it. And so like, for me, like, I have my own sort of like verbiage, or like, I like to say top instead of dom. But like, in the general kink community, like, when I am teaching workshops, when I'm educating, when I'm doing classes or whatever, like, I say sub and dom, and like, I use them interchangeably. But like, I personally, Katie, I don't like calling myself like a dom. I say I top sometimes.
Yeah, and I like the idea that the submissive person isn't actually submitting. Like, they still have as much power as they ever have. Which is why I love the concept of calling an instance of a kink encounter a scene. Because it's a scene. In the same way that when two actors are, like, Ian McKellen isn't actually a wizard.
What?
You are aware that he is not actually a wizard.
Mm. Sir Ian, well, how Sir does Ian, he know Ian, where to stand?
People told him.
Where? How does he know what to say?
They give him a script. Huh. Written in the script. That's a very...
I'm really proud that we took that bit so far.
That was a reference for 10 people. Just you're welcome. Oh. But in much the same way, in a scene is basically an instance of a kink encounter. So scenes begin, scenes end.
Yeah.
Well,
and I do want to say though that when you get into conversations about like 24/7
outside of
the bedroom, like those are also perfectly valid and totally like normal parts of much of the kink community. But like, because there are a lot of like lifestyle people, you know what I mean? And that is super valid. But that also comes with its own, I mean, I know I just said this, but like its own set of like negotiations and rules and agreements and that kind of thing. But yeah.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying though.
Yeah. Yeah. In that. Yeah. I guess I was just harping on the language involved. And you saying that like, oh, a submissive person isn't necessarily actually giving up power, although in some cases,
I think the
word scene lends itself well towards edifying that.
Yeah. I think it's like alone, you know, it's looking
L-O-A-N alone.
Alone. Yes. Not alone. Like home alone. Because like, I feel it's like
a home loan, not like the home alone.
Yes. Like a home. God damn it. Fuck.
Boom.
But like, I think, like, for me, the appeal of submission, the appeal of being the bottom is, like, I don't have to think.
Oh, yeah.
I am turning off my brain. I'm looking at my partner and saying, like, I'm trusting you to, like, guide this experience and make this experience into something where, like, I don't have to think. I will just do. And that, to me, is, like, really, really appealing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, for other people, it's for other reasons, you know, like some people like the service aspect of it. Some people like the sort of care element of it. Like it's submission looks different on everybody because the terms and your partner, and it's so complex. It's so complex, and I have no idea how to talk about any of it.
I think that's why one of the reasons why it's so fascinating. Like something I like to think about is like, let me give you a little question here, Kate.
Okay.
And to anybody who wants to try to answer.
Oh God, now I'm nervous.
What is the single most complicated naturally occurring structure that humans have ever observed in the universe?
The spiral.
No.
What?
That one's quite simple actually. It's the human brain, Katie. The human brain is by far the most complicated naturally occurring structure in the entire universe that we've ever observed. Stars, gravity, four forces all acting together. We can make very accurate models of galaxies and shit. Those are generally pretty well understood. I mean, there's still a lot we don't know. But in terms of, we understand galaxies much better than we understand the human brain.
That's annoying.
Right?
I find that to be deep. Like, I'm annoyed.
You own one.
I am deeply annoyed.
You own the most complicated, one of the most... You own an instance of the most complicated.
I would rather own a galaxy because it would. Me too. It's fucking. It's exhausting having this brain.
It's pretty jank. You must be very jealous of Will Smith and the other Man in Black, and that cat. Must be real jealous of that cat.
Well, have you ever noticed that it only rains when I cry, Eric?
That's probably really funny. I'm sorry.
That was a really tight Men in Black reference. You're welcome.
Anyways. Do you know, so given that one human brain is the most complicated naturally occurring structure that humans have ever observed in the cosmos, when you put two of those motherfuckers together, it is infinitely more complicated. So every conversation, every interaction you have with somebody else is two different instances of the most complicated naturally occurring structure that we've ever observed in the cosmos interacting with each other. And so a kink scene is one of those instances, which is why it's so fucking complicated, but also why it's so fucking fascinating, is every single kink relationship is unique in the same way that every single human relationship is unique.
I'm stressed out now. That's stressful.
I think it's pretty cool. But also, on the topic of you turn like being submissive and turning your brain off, how much of that do you think has to do with your ADHD?
All of it.
All of it.
Okay. I know that you're not shocked, but we forgot to do the last one, the last of Hughes.
Oh, the five.
We got to do that because otherwise we're never going to get, we got it. What is it? Tell me about it right now. Go.
Oh, gosh. So the fifth one is, as an adult, finding others and exploring with others. Especially, it's like I don't know if this is what Hughes intended it to be thought of as, but I think of it as like the promised land. Like now, for example. You and I are both in that phase.
I just got really excited to yell level 5 the next time we're doing a scene together.
level 5, baby! Picturing, like, you know, an animation in, like, an RPG or an MMORPG when you level up and there's, like, sparkles and stuff.
I'm gonna get you a little, you know, like, when, like, the PlayStation, like, the little boo-doo and the little achievement is unlocked.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna just scream, achievement unlocked, level 5, and I'm just gonna ruin everything.
That's Xbox, you fucking pleb.
I don't play video games, so eat my whole ass.
But so that's sort of, so... Again, this is my interpretation of what Hughes was trying to say. So one is you're sort of in the dark. You kind of notice that you find interesting things, like, well, this scene in the movie where the person, or in the superhero movie where things are tied up, or like for me, I like getting my shirt sleeves all tangled so that I can't move.
It's followed by a period of sharing
have nothing with others sexuality. And largely with that being kind of rejected, like, because they are also in that same phase. And then the sort of weird middle period where an immense stigma is created in your own head. Well, not just created in your own head, but because of the way that society treats
that, makes sense.
That kind of stuff. You're in the sort of like, oh shit, here we go. Then is followed by another phase of further exploring and then finding people that do, or at least willing to explore and have perhaps taboo conversations. And then the fifth stage is like, okay, now that I found these people, now that I'm like over 18 and have agency and can go where I want and all that stuff, now I can explore my own identity and help other people explore their identities. And that's just is a wonderful place to be if you're being healthy and consensual and safe about it, of course. So that's sort of how I understand it. And I think those five stages are eerily similar to at least my own experience with my neurodivergency.
There's certainly an argument to be had, I think.
It's kind of strange, which is not to say that, again, like as you said at the top of the episode, it's not that if you are kinky, you are neurodivergent, or if you're neurodivergent, then you are kinky. They're separate things. But in this case, I find them to be immensely analogous.
Yeah.
I also, something we haven't really touched on yet that I'd love to talk about is, how does kink aid in or in any given any way relate to your neurodivergency?
Oh, well, I'm glad that you asked, Eric, because that was the next thing that I wanted to talk about. You did a good job. That was real good. That was a good...
Katie, that's your thing, not mine.
Transition. Also, just so everybody knows, this is going to be a long episode.
This is part one of them.
Yeah, this is part one, but also this is probably going to be a long boy because we fucked up and got way off track. So, okay, so the thing that I think is really interesting about kink and neurodivergence is that, so there's been a ton of studies done on basically sex and neurodivergency, particularly sex and ADHD. And over and over and over, these studies show that people with ADHD experience dramatically higher levels of sexual dysfunction than neurotypical people. And like, it shows up in like 39% of men and like 47% of women and stuff like that.
I just want to cover, what do you mean by sexual dysfunction?
Well, I was going to tell you, Eric. So here's the thing. So across the board, the sort of like dysfunctions or problems that people with ADHD tend to have during sex are the following things. I wrote them down. Trouble paying attention and staying focused during sex. In general, having a low sex drive. Now, I want to caveat by that saying that there is also a sort of other side of the coin of a lot of people also experience hypersexuality, but it can kind of peak and valley as well. Or sometimes you have like extremely low sex drive and sometimes it's like, oh God, it's all I can think about. But it tends to be very one or the other with a lot of people with ADHD. With that too, with the balance between hypo and hypersexuality is very sudden changes in your sex drive. Like literally you can be like doing the act, you fucking having sex and like change your mind in the middle of it and be like, I hate this.
That happens to me all the time. Like 50% of the time, at least.
Yeah. So then Another component that comes into play is things like risk and risk-taking behavior that tends to be a little bit more related to hypersexuality. And then the big sort of glaring major one is for anybody with ADHD, trouble orgasming. Mm. And then for men in particular, erectile dysfunction. And then for women, just trouble with arousal. Mm. So those are kind of the problems. But what I think is very interesting about kink, and what I think is very interesting about kink as it relates to ADHD, is that kink is very, very uniquely suited to help with a lot of these problems. And I'm very carefully and very specifically using the word help, not solve, because I am not purporting that kink is like the savior of everything. It's going to cure your ADHD. Not saying that. But if you think about kink and you think about like what is going on when you're having these like kink experiences, a lot of them are sort of a direct answer to the issues of sexual dysfunction in people with ADHD. And I think that's fucking fascinating. It's so interesting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, I spaced out during the last sentence that you
I
said.
Watched it happen. I was like, there's no one is home.
I'm sorry. I was still reading it, and then literally like end the last sentence. I cut the last like three words and I was like, oh shit. I totally missed that. Do you mind repeating yourself? For the viewers, for the listeners at home.
No.
Definitely not for me personally.
Not for you personally, because you've been paying attention this whole time.
Yes.
No, I mean, I think it's just, it's fascinating how if you start sort of breaking down the component pieces of kink and different activities and different things that you can do in kink, they sort of become like a one-to-one parallel of like a lot of the problems that people have in terms of sexual dysfunction.
Oh, so they're like microcosms of...
Yeah, like, well, like you talked about earlier, like... trouble paying attention or staying focused.
Mm-hmm.
Sensation play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like varying the sensations, exploring different senses, like bringing attention to or taking away different senses. Like that is really, really useful. But there's still like a stigma of like, oh my God, I can't use a blindfold because that's not kinky. And I'm like, yeah. And it works fucking great if you have ADHD because you don't have anything to look at. You can just focus on the sensations that are happening around you. Like,
I mean, I think in I said earlier that as I explored my kink identity, my ADHD identity or neurodivergent identity started to take shape as well. And one of the big absolute shockers to me was we were doing a scene one time and you, like I fucking love classical music, like a lot. And you were like, I'm gonna put music in yours. I can't remember what piece it was specifically.
I think it was Rachmaninoff 5.
There is no Rachmaninoff 5.
Well, then I was wrong.
I think it was Rock 3. And I remember being when we were like, again, negotiating, like, what do we want this scene to be? What are we gonna do? I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And so, but then the moment came and you did, and the scene started, and I was listening to Rock 3, which is one of my all-time favorite pieces of music. Rachmaninoff's Third Piano Concerto, by the way. I remember being like, we got like a couple minutes in, and I was like, this is not going to work. Because it was just too much, which is strange, because in my everyday life, I very often need many different things going on, such to focus on any of them in any capacity. And so I figured, oh, in a kink setting, in a sexual setting... Katie, you're...
I'm so thirsty.
Your water's out. There you go.
Oh God. Oh, man.
God, I was so worried you were going to start chewing on that ice, but then you started choking, and I was very relieved.
So now I'm chewing and choking at the same time. This is a great podcast audio. Hey, everybody, with Misophony, I'd like to personally apologize for this week's episode, sponsored by Bad Life Choices.
I have some chalk, some styrofoam nearby, if you want me to rub those together, whatever you want. but I remember being shocked that that wasn't the case. Because in my everyday life, if I'm doing work or cleaning or whatever, I need to have many different things going on, mm-hmm. such to focus on any of them, because then I can bounce back and forth switching between focuses, and that just helps me stay going. But that is apparently not at all the case in any sexual setting, kinky or otherwise. Which I don't like. I don't know what's up with that, because I'm only like 2 months into my kink experience. But I found out that in kink, the opposite was true. Earplugs, blindfolds, restrained, minimizing of any other variables, so that the sensation that in this that you are giving to me mm-hmm. is the only thing that's happening.
Yeah.
Like one of the most, something that I get asked about a lot that I'm hesitant to talk about because I'm bad at it, is practicing mindfulness. And being, which is roughly can be described as just viewing in a completely objective and non-judgmental way the physical, the sensations that are going on, the noises you're hearing, the sensations within your own body. The most mindful I've ever been in my life, by far, was when we were doing wax play, when you were doing wax play on mm-hmm. me, which to those listening who don't know what that is, basically there are these specifically made candles that I'm just personifying these candles.
That's fine.
Who? Yeah, sure.
Who's you know, wax? Barry and George, Barry, the candles.
I'm picturing them dancing now with
little, like little like Lumiere, Beauty and the Beast.
I was thinking
our guest. I'm sorry, that went too far. I was thinking
like Steamboat Mickey, you know, oh, with the sure. glove and he's like bouncing.
Yeah.
Anyways, these.
What are we doing?
Well, I need to clarify for safety purposes. Sex. Wax play melts at a low temperature, so that's enough to kind of like hurt a little bit and notice it, but it's not hot enough to do tissue damage. Do not ever
do
wax play with regular candles.
Don't do it. It's ever. Bad. It's bad for you.
Bad time. Anyways, I was blindfolded and earplugged, and you would basically drip this wax onto me, which again was not enough to do tissue damage. It's hot and like sort of jarring, but it doesn't do tissue damage. At random spots in my body. And my entire brain went boo. And the only thing that was occurring, I was just aware of my entire body because I never knew where the next drop was going to fall.
Right.
And that like changed my understanding of what mindfulness was, that experience.
That's like a really nice compliment. Really? Thank you.
Well, it was the wax, not you.
Well, I could have built a machine that did that. I helped a little bit.
I'm just being a
joke. You're right. My job could have been replaced by a robot.
Well, right. Soon enough, all of ours is topical. But anyways, so as my kink identity has been developed, so too has my neurodivergent identity. And I think a lot of it, what's also interesting, I think a lot of it has to do with turning my brain off. Like when I'm subbing or bottoming, my brain turns completely off. I'm trusting you to provide whatever experience you think would suit the moment. And so I don't have any decisions to make. I don't have anywhere to go. I like being restrained for that reason. I don't have to worry about moving my arms because they're just in the same spot.
But you also absolutely, kind of to tie in both a conversation about consent and then also like one of the problems that a lot of people with ADHD have is like their mind suddenly changing. It's like you absolutely have the power in the moment at any point to be like, nah. No,
absolutely,
like we're done. Or like, can you change this or fix this or whatever? And I think that is also one of the other reasons why kink is so appealing is because like you have permission to change your mind. And like, I want to be very clear. You always have permission to say no and you always have permission to change your mind. But like in kink, especially because there is so much communication and there's so much negotiation, that it is understood that like you're like, and I struggle with it. You know, I struggle with like asking for changes or stuff like that. But it is sort of understood that like sometimes stuff is going to go wrong or something that worked yesterday isn't going to work today. And so it's always a constant conversation about consent and change and negotiation. Whereas I think that like sometimes we have this idea that like, oh, well, I'm having sex, gotta see it through. Like, no, fuck that.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, you don't.
I think like the high octaneness that can occur during a kink scene, or the volatility that can occur during a kink scene, requires the couple or people or however, whatever the fuck is going on, to be hyper vigilant about consent and communication and negotiation, all that stuff, such that like during vanilla sex, all of those practices that we've learned through kink scenes, we're now just extremely good at saying like, hold on, my arm is numb from sitting in this position or whatever the hell. Sort of, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but the one I'm thinking of is like, so I'm a professional cook, and in a kitchen, it is very dangerous to be unaware of your surroundings. it's very dangerous to just whip around without checking first, because somebody could be carrying a massive pot of boiling oil and scar both of you for life. Like, you, it's because of the...
Yeah? Eric? Oh,
Katie, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you wanna Katie, talk a little bit
Katie
more
got
about
an oil
pans
burn on her
of
face.
Hot oil?
Okay.
Burns on your face?
I'm sorry, Katie.
It's okay. I'm just giving you shit.
Anyways.
It makes you look cool.
Because of the volatility and high and danger that is present in a professional culinary setting, you have to be hyper-vigilant about those sorts of things, such that now, when I'm in far less high-octane situations, I'm still very aware of my surroundings. I'm still very aware that when I'm coming around a corner at speed, that I should slow down for a second and look before I... And so I think kinkiness, can very much, even infrequent kink experiences, encounters, scenes, can help vanilla sex. Like, if you have a partner and neither of you are particularly kinking, every once in a while, just doing something that requires a bit more communication, a bit more just...
Yeah.
It can help you just get on the same page about, hey, if you don't like something, you can always tell me. Which, not to be overly, you know, broad about it, but in everyday life, now it's like, I feel you, Katie, that I can say, like, hey, it bothers me when you do this little stupid thing. Because we've established that we both of us always have permission to say what makes us comfortable and stuff like that. So I think...
Which you are very good at, and I am very bad at.
Yeah, we're working.
We're working on it.
You did well last time. We were using the...
I know.
The deep muscle tissue massager thing, the vrrr thing. Yeah, the vrrr. And like, you...
Not in a sex way.
Not
I
in a sex
very
way.
Very clear.
Just in a massage way.
I asked for one whole thing.
You did.
I
was
did.
Very proud of you.
I did it.
It was very
I did
nice.
Yay.
Yay. But anyways, I'm in a stage... I'm in the beginning of my kink identity, I suppose. Or at least early stage 5 of my kink identity. Largely thanks to you. Thank you very much. And so I'm realizing...
Basically a hero.
You basically are. I'm realizing all the ways that it's helping me that I didn't expect. I couldn't imagine my life any other way anymore. Pretty great.
Well, here's what I think at this point. I think we need to do a part 2.
Yeah, we're...
I think we're going to have to do a part 2.
I was going
to
bring up a whole new subject.
What were we going to bring up?
Well, let's save it, because we want to start talking about it, but we should keep our episodes to reasonably consistent length so people know that they have enough time to listen to it on the way to work.
Let's
or whatever.
Keeping it consensual,
consensual 1 hour.
That's important.
But the difference between how being submissive helps my ADHD because I make zero decisions, and how being dominant or topping helps my ADHD because I'm making all the decisions, but Ooh. For one exact purpose, which is to provide my partner the best possible experience. So I'm never wondering anything. I'm just, everything I'm doing is in service of making your experience as good as it can be, which is like the exact opposite of being submissive, but it helps my ADHD in exactly the same way.
It's called being a service top, Eric.
Whoa.
That's what that is.
It's all the lingo. There's so much lingo.
I know. So
anyways,
is that the teaser trailer for next time?
I suppose it is. Do you have any little closing thoughts at the end there before we shut it on out?
I think the thing that I would say, and again, like, I feel like I'm just preemptively apologizing because I don't... It's weird. Like, I've spent so long teaching workshops and classes and being in the kink community, but I still have this fear that I'm gonna like say the wrong thing. And it's like, well, if you say the wrong thing, then you apologize and you educate yourself and you move on. But I'm just like, what if I was wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think that's my perfectionism showing through. But I think the real thing is, like, kink is huge. It is a huge topic. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of nuance. But I don't know, like, the reason why I wanted to start this conversation is because I'm realizing how many people we are meeting and hearing from and honestly learning from who are on stage 3, stage 4, stage 5. Like,
yeah.
There are so many people who are out there and who are looking for information about, like, well, how does kink apply to me? How does my special concerns, how do my special needs and wants and that kind of thing, how do they translate into my belonging to the kink community, I think. And what I would say is, like, my answer to those people is, like, you belong. Like, you absolutely belong. Like, you are valid regardless of neurodivergency, regardless of mental illness, like, whatever things that you might have that you feel like are a hindrance, they're not. Because the whole point of kink is solving those problems together and establishing that intimacy together and negotiating and communicationing. That's the word that you use. And I think that's just like, that's the whole point. Like, that's why I wanted to do these episodes, because I don't ever want anyone to feel like they don't belong, especially when I feel like there's so much good and there's so much like healthy, good stuff that can come out of participating in kink.
Shining, shimmering splendor.
Tell me, princess.
I can show you the world.
Don't you dare close your eyes. So it's a song about butt sex, Harry.
Did you say?
A Whole New World is about butt sex.
It is, isn't it?
It is a song about butt sex.
That's right. You're welcome, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. Fuck you. End of the podcast. Congratulations, you made it to the end of the episode. Before we go, from all of us at Infinite Quest, we just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening to our podcast week after week. Thank you for leaving us reviews, letting people know why you love the show. Thank you for sharing our content on social media. You have no idea how much all of that helps us out. We are building something truly special together, and we could not do it without you, our community. And Eric and I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you. We are so, so grateful. This week in particular, we want to thank our new patrons. So thank you to Caleb, Brianna, Kitty, Samantha, Jessica, RK, Becca, Elliot, and last but not least, Commodore Cuddlebutts. Thank you particularly to Commodore Cuddlebutts. Anyway, if you're interested in becoming a patron yourself, you can head on over to patreon.com/infinitequest for more information. And again, from all of us at Infinite Quest, thank you. Remember to be kind to yourself this week, remember to drink water, and remember that we love you.
We love you, thanks.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you soon.